Today's episode of Trackin' Food on the Mid-Range Podcast Network is brought to you by Scout. If you're wanting to learn more about Vancouver's food and cultural sphere with regards to community news, new restaurant openings, essential guides to some of the city's best offerings, as well as who's hiring, Scout is where you should go. You can find them at scoutmagazine.ca. That's scoutmagazine.ca. And if you're on Vancouver Island, they also have a sister website called Islandist. Same type of content, only island-driven. That's islandist.ca. We're proud to have Scout as our presenting sponsor, as we believe what they scout out is an excellent complement to what we're offering here on Trackin' Food. Do check them out. Once again, that's scoutmagazine.ca. And welcome to the Trackin' Food Podcast. You're joining us on another very, very beautiful day here in August. My name is Jamie Ma, your host as always. And sitting in front of me, really nice haircut actually, is my co-host Mickey McLeod. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm good, thanks. I cut it myself. Fun fact about me, I've been cutting my own hair since March. I've been literally cutting my own hair with like normal scissors. It's crazy.
Why? Why don't you not know anyone?
I don't know. I kind of got into it. I like it now.
Salons are open.
No, I know, but like I'm saving like money. I don't know. It's weird. I got used to it. Like I go in the mirror and like I pull certain strands out and I'm like, it's literally like I'm constantly cutting my hair throughout the week. And then like by the end of the week, I have this like totally like normal, aligned, even cut. It's weird. It's super weird. I know. See, now you're looking at it more closely. Don't look at it closely.
It does look good actually. It's short, but it's good. But yeah, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just enjoying the end of summer. Whenever summer comes to an end, I get really restless because I'm a fall guy. Tristan Young, if you're listening to this, sorry about that. He's turning into Winter Tristan very soon. Well, maybe not till October, but I'm a fall guy. I love fall. So this transition period is always very, I enjoy it a lot. It's very nostalgic for me.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know that you're probably the opposite.
I'm a summer guy through and through, and this is very sad for me because I'm really enjoying this weather, but it's been good. We haven't done a podcast since the end of July. Our last episode, obviously, was with Leticia Castro from The Diamond. If anybody out there hasn't checked it out, do check it out. She's fantastic. A lot of great stuff there. We had a lot of fun on that one.
Yep.
Today we have a very special guest.
We do.
Yeah, someone who's been in the news pretty much every day for the last like 5 months.
Yes.
Everyone might know who she is.
Probably listening to this know who she is, yeah.
Yeah, her name is Dr. Bonnie Henry. She is the top health official, top health doctor here in BC.
Oh my God!
Okay, well, Mickey's
Bo
excited.
Henry. Holy cow.
Yeah, fun fact about this one. A couple of weeks ago, I was reading some stuff on CBC, and there was a lot of restaurant backlash coming from some guests that are giving some flack, and it really bothered me. Obviously, me and Mickey work in the restaurant community still. We are very excited to be lucky enough to be able to go back to work. And, you know, we've been working at hotels that follow the protocols. You know, it's not fun wearing a mask every day, not washing, but it's got to do what you got to do.
I like it, actually.
No,
to be honest with you.
I mean, some days.
Growing on me.
Yes, I don't mind it. I mean, you get used to it sometimes. But it's, it is what it is. We're all out there for each other. We're going to make sure that, everyone stays safe. But to hear that people are, and I've, seen this where people are, are frustrated and, it's understandable. This pandemic's been going on long enough. People get tired of it and sometimes you don't want to follow the rules. You make a reservation for seven people and they tell you can only six together and, sometimes they turn you away, stuff like this. I can see how it's frustrating. But because of that, I was frustrated and I was like, I'm just going to cold call Dr. Bonnie's office and I'm just going to email her and I'm getting her on the podcast. And thankfully enough, her assistant got back to us about a week ago and said that we can probably make this happen. And yeah, and so then they set a date for today to have her on. And then so guess what happens? We get her on, Dr. Bonnie comes on. And as we're about to start, I find out that Mickey has a cousin who works with her, who he did not fucking tell me about. And I was like, we could have, and all she says is like, if you just told me this, I would have happily come on. And I'm like, why didn't you tell me this?
In my defense, my mindset, so shout out to John Mark if you're listening. I think you might be, I suspect you might be. John Mark's a cousin of mine. He's a great guy who works in the government, lives in Victoria. I didn't think of it in the way of like, I thought, probably subconsciously, it might be better to ask Bonnie to come on the merits of our podcast. In retrospect, I think I probably could have mentioned it, but like, I don't know. I've been so, I don't know. I've been, my mind has been in many different places this past 4 months. So.
Yeah, could have mentioned it after.
I could have mentioned it. I apologize to you. Apologize to everyone listening. I made a mistake.
And, no, it's fine. Anyways, we're very grateful that she accepted our invitation. This episode is fantastic. We were only given 30 minutes though. So our podcasts usually run an hour long. So we weren't able to kind of get knee deep in a lot of the questions that we wanted to.
Yeah, and thanks for people to, we reached out to a lot of people. We only actually found out we were going to be interviewing Bonnie within like a 2-day period. So shout out to everyone who gave us questions and sent us questions. We unfortunately, we're working with obviously a time limit and we couldn't dive in more deeper to more specific, nuanced topics of the pandemic and other things related to that. But we did our best to sort of keep the vibe of our show, which is more of a conversational based. But for everyone who did take the time to write those questions, thank you so much. Maybe we'll be having her on another time and we'll be able to facilitate those questions moving forward. So
no, she was great. The conversation was fantastic. She was really thorough in a lot of things that we talked about. Mm-hmm. We expect and hope that anybody out there who takes a listen to this episode, we will enjoy it. She was very candid. I mean, she's got a lot of experience.
She's a foodie.
Yeah, she's a foodie. She owned a restaurant. So.
Yeah.
And
I know that.
Yeah, and I think she's a part owner of a winery. I think it's Clos du Soleil out in the Okanagan. So.
Wow. So, all these fun facts.
That was one of the things I was going to ask her, but we didn't get a chance to.
Yeah.
And then there's a sad thing going on in my life these days because I've been watching a lot of playoff basketball. And then I find out that my co-host here is not. So that was the other thing I'm kind of ragging him about today. So.
Yeah, I watched the game one of the Blazers-Lakers. Because Jamie and I, listener, if you know, these are our two favorite teams. So we're actually mortal enemies currently at the moment. And I watched Charles Barkley on TNT bring out a fucking broom, insinuating that the Portland Trailblazers, who got into the eighth seed by the skin of their teeth, and obviously heroic performance by Damian Lillard, unprecedented heroic performance by him, that they were going to sweep the best team in the NBA with the two of the top four best players in the NBA. And I was like, okay, it's over. And I just kind of stopped watching. And then lo and behold, the Lakers just destroyed them in game two and then destroyed them in game three. So I would usually come home and watch basketball at night, but instead I've been watching like live feeds of Portland Independent on Twitch, like for the protests that are happening down there. And then with the no fans, it's just so fucking weird, Jamie. Do you think it's weird, like when you watch it?
Yeah, it's weird, but I mean, watching Luka Doncic hit a game-winning shot like the other day was pretty cool.
He's great, yeah. But like I just can't. I feel like I haven't rebooted or restarted my passion for NBA basketball. But I still have a passion for NBA basketball. I just can't get there right now. It's so weird.
Okay. Well, you better get there soon.
Okay.
Our friendship is on the line here.
Okay. Well, if our friendship's on the line, then I'll read up. And I'll...
But otherwise, I mean, this month of August has been great. I've been checking out the Kiefer Yard a lot. What the guys did down there was awesome.
Yeah.
Anybody out there who hasn't checked it out, it's super fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's been a really fun summer. Spending a lot of time outside and sitting on patios. Restaurant community, I hope you guys are doing really well. Thanks for all the support that we've been getting with this podcast. We hope you guys enjoy this episode. As always, you'll find this episode on Scout Magazine. Do check us out on our website, midrangevancouver.com. The guys here have another episode of Beats on Repeat being dropped probably next week sometime.
Yeah, so we just released our latest episode with Death Proof. And the album was Bizarre Ride to the Far Side. So if you haven't checked that out, check it out. If you want to hear Tristan talk about the mirrored female character dynamics in the first part of Death Proof and the second part of Death Proof, man, fascinating stuff. Check it out. And then our next episode, which will be coming out probably next week, we featured the just lovely, lovely dance electronic album from Todd DeHerge called It's Album Time. And the film we did was a cult classic, John Carpenter's They Live. So that's coming up in the pipeline. And like Jamie said, check out midrangevancouver.com. Jamie's released his NBA playoff predictions, which are in full swing. So we're going to see how those shake out. I think it was pretty safe with most of them, but I mean, you know, you can't bet against the favorites.
Yeah, of course. Check all that stuff that Mickey just mentions there. And we hope you enjoy this episode. We want to say thank you, Dr. Bonnie Henry and her office once again for all the efforts they've been doing. It's been always wonderful to have the stewardship of one hand during this whole pandemic. And everybody out there, stay safe. Keep following the protocols. Keep going to restaurants. They are safe. You know, we're all working hard to be here.
Be kind.
Be kind to each other. And
we're going to get through it.
We'll get through it. Enjoy the episode. Dr. Bonnie Henry, welcome to the podcast. I want to say thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
We are very grateful to have you today. Obviously, you've been at the forefront of this entire pandemic for us here in the province of British Columbia. As a resident of Vancouver, I want to commend you for all the efforts you and your office have done for us. It's been wonderful with all the stewardship. And I just want to say thank you. I just want to get that out.
Hello as well. And we are, to echo Jamie's sentiments, very, very happy and grateful to have you on our show today as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. You know, it's been a long few months, and really things that I don't think any of us ever really thought were going to happen. But people in BC have done a really great job, and you know, we're all through this together, and we've got a ways to go yet.
I guess the first thing we've been trying to do here with the podcast over the last couple months, when we've been having people on to talk about the pandemic, and with regards to our podcast, when we talk about people working in the restaurant community, is I try to keep this very personal, and I want to ask you just as yourself, how are you? I mean, how are you dealing personally, and how has this whole process been for you?
Yeah, you know, thanks for asking. It's been a long and somewhat grueling. I think the word I've been using lately is relentless. You know, I think this has gone on a lot longer than we initially thought. It's been way more stressful for all of us, I think. And that's, you know, at the very beginning of this, really thinking through, how are we going to get through something that may go on for months and months and months and maybe even years? And part of our philosophy around that was to say, you know, we need to recognize that we have to be kind to each other, and we have to take deep breaths and work it through and find new ways of doing things that support each other. And I do that for myself as well. I recognize how difficult it has been for so many people. And that's one of the things that keeps me going.
Well, I think you had, what was it, one day off?
I did, you know, and I have to admit, I did take, I took a few days off last week, and my sister came out to visit. And so that was really nice.
Yeah, we heard you had a week off. That must have been very relaxing and nice for you to kind of clear your head a little bit and everything. Did you get to do anything fun? Did you get to jump in some water or anything like that?
Don't ask. I did. I went to one of the Gulf Islands, and we had a little bit of a time away. I went to a great restaurant on Galliano, Pilgrim, which was fabulous. And but unfortunately, my sister fell and broke her arm, so we had to come back early and get that taken care of. But she's okay now.
Oh, no. Oh, well, our best to your sister. I hope her recovery is quick. That's unfortunate, but I'm glad that you were able to get away for a little bit there. When you deal with what's going on with this pandemic, and specifically with what we deal with here with the restaurant community and stuff like this, what's been the response that you've received from the community and you know, people in the industry and stuff like this? Are you in constant communication with people like that and restaurants and restaurant people? And I work at the Fairmont Pacific Rim, and I've actually seen you there a few times.
Yes, I have several times recently.
Yeah. What's the feedback you've been getting from the industry? And
you know, I have to say that I'm a foodie. I love going to restaurants. I have favorite restaurants all over BC and Canada and the world. And actually, in a former time in my life, I was an owner of a restaurant. So I have a bit of an appreciation of how challenging it is at the best of times. So, you know, I have been so impressed. I think it was a shock for all of us in March, and we recognized that restaurants were one of the areas, and bars and pubs and other places were areas where people could transmit this, and it was a risk both to staff and to people who are coming into restaurants. And you know, we tried to sort of shut things down slowly and see if we could manage, and that didn't work. And I was just incredibly impressed at how people were able to innovate and respond to transition to the takeout for a lot of people. For some people, of course, that just wasn't possible. And I know it's been a hardship for a lot of people in the restaurant industry. But I was just, I mean, I could not have survived those months myself without some of the takeout places that I go to here in Victoria. And how people came together and reimagined things and supported their communities, I think it was amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I've detailed this. I think one of the silver linings of the pandemic is the fact that, I mean, the restaurant community is a very innovative and very vibrant community. And I haven't seen as much cohesion and love for each other and people pulling for each other. And it's been very remarkable to see. And I know the industry, as much as it's been on tough times for a long time here for a lot of people, I know it's going to bounce back once this all passes. And I think there's going to be a lot of great things that come out of it. But one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring you on today was about a couple weeks ago, I read some stuff in the interior where there was a lot of restaurants were starting to receive a little bit of fallback or maybe some backlash from customers, maybe struggling with protocols and stuff like this. As BC's top health official, when you see stuff like that, how do you manage people's expectations and people's anxieties? I mean, I recently just watched a really great video on Vox.com where, you know, they're saying down there that, you know, the wearing masks down in the United States has become a very polarized idea. And a lot of it's also based on just, you know, a lot of competing voices and people get scared. They get their fears come out and they don't know who to listen to. But luckily for us here at BC, we've had one voice, your voice. And I think we're very lucky for that. But how do you manage that for people? How do you, when you see stuff like that, how do you deal with that? And how do you want to manage the response to that?
I know it's been such a challenge because, you know, when people are afraid or anxious, some people act out and become angry or they go into denial. And, you know, that's where we have to try and take the high road as best we can. And you know, I really want to commend the restaurant industry for taking up the call when I said, you know, we need to learn how to do this safely. And the guidance that's come out, the way people have adapted to put up barriers, to adapted to keeping the groups small. And I know it's been a hard thing for us. You know, the intention of putting in the restrictions we did were to make the environment safe, both for the staff and for people who are coming into the restaurant. So that's why groups are small. And I know there's been a bit of pushback, I think partly because people are tired and they were thinking it's, you know, it's July, long weekend. We just want this to be over. And there's that sense of we need to just go out and let loose. And unfortunately, people in the restaurant industry sometimes bore the brunt of that. So what our message has always been is that this is about everybody working together and staying safe and supporting each other and staying calm. And I think people have got that message. When we started to get some of those reports, we had some meetings with local officials, with our health authority officials. We put some extra time and effort into inspectors going out and supporting restaurants and the restaurant community. And of course, now we, as a last resort, we have some enforcement so that we can put in place where people can be fined if they're not doing the right thing. But I have a number of times, and so has Minister Dix and the Premier, really called on people's better natures and to remind them that this is there for the protection of the people who are working in the industry and that they need to really step back and take a deep breath and follow the rules.
I actually work in the hotel industry as well, Bonnie, at the actual airport. And obviously, it's a little bit of a different animal out there because we're so close to travel. Mm-hmm. But I've found that generally the guests that, because we've just recently mandated masks as well in all public spaces due to the protocol. But we have guests still that come that get off from different airlines who just, I guess, aren't aware of the mask policy. But when we approach them from a very diplomatic, calm approach, they have no problem putting on the mask. So it's only been a couple times in the basically 6 weeks that we've been open where we've had any pushback on that. So,
well, that's good to hear because I think you're right. I mean, what you mentioned earlier about, you know, it becoming a polarizing issue in the United States in particular, and, you know, the challenges that they're facing, our neighbors to the south, are really discouraging and frightening in some ways. But we've been very intentional about not making it that here. It's about respect. It's about doing what we can to protect ourselves and each other. And as you say, when we come to it from that approach, most people will do the right thing.
Yeah, I think it's so polarizing, just what's happening in the States and how they've handled this, and not only U.S. politics as well. I think as Canadians, and especially living in British Columbia, we sometimes lose track of focusing on our community, and because we're so inundated with all the stuff that's happening to our neighbors of the south. And I know you studied down there for a bit of time in California, is that correct?
I did, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I have regular contact with my colleagues in Alaska, Washington, Washington State, Oregon, and Idaho. It's called Region 10 of the U.S., and we meet at least weekly. And so, you know, I do have a good sense of what's going on there. And it's so, so challenging because they have many, I mean, we know most people in the U.S. are good people and they want the right thing. We all want our families to be healthy and happy. And it's really distressing to watch it become a political issue.
It's tough. I mean, I think it's tough on everyone and people, sometimes it's hard for people to navigate what's in their best interest. But, at the end of the day, I think top health officials are generally where you want to kind of seek for your information, in my personal opinion. I read and I've seen that you wrote a book back in 2009. It's called Soap and Water and Common Sense, which I thought was really, really kind of cool. When you wrote that, obviously, 11 years ago now, could you have seen this coming?
Oh, there's a good question. So I wrote it just as we were going into another pandemic, the 2009 pandemic of H1N1 influenza, which turned out to be, you know, relatively mild as pandemics go. And I wonder if we got a little bit complacent after that. People thought, oh yeah, we know how to deal with this sort of thing. And some public health issues were put on the back burner. Public health services were whittled away. People lost a bit of faith in things like immunization for influenza, which is a little surprising to me. So, you know, I've spent a lot of years talking about infectious disease outbreaks and the potential for pandemics. And I've been on, you know, national and international committees with the World Health Organization looking at how we would respond. But I don't know that I ever really believed that we would have one of those types like we are having now, where so much of society was affected, where the world was affected. And this virus is just severe enough, particularly in older people, that we really needed to stop its transmission and prevent our healthcare systems from being overwhelmed. And when we saw what was happening in Italy and New York City, it was very frightening for all of us. We know a lot more now. And we know that we can manage this virus, but we still need everybody to do their bit. We need to learn how to live with this for the next while until we either have effective treatments or a vaccine or, you know, so we're not out of the woods, but I think we've learned a lot.
And when stuff like this happens, I mean, you're an epidemiologist, you've been doing this for years, you were part of the SARS, you worked on SARS, right? Am I correct?
I was in Toronto. Yeah.
And then did you do some stuff with Ebola?
I did. I was working in Uganda with a large Ebola outbreak a few years ago.
Like when you see stuff like this and you see the kind of the reach that something like this can happen or how it has affected the global community, one of the things about being a physician is, do you guys ever look at stuff like this as like, is there anything that we as a global community can do once we get past this in a preventative measure? Like, they obviously say that it came out, they think it came from China and that, you know, there's, I think it jumps from animals to humans and stuff like this. I think that's, I could be wrong on all this.
No, you're right.
is there ways that you, as a doctor and as when you work with the World Health Organization, where you guys all think like, you know, if we did a couple things, we could maybe prevent these types of pandemics?
Yeah, so absolutely. And there's on several different levels. So, you know, at the basic level, like you say, these viruses, coronaviruses, influenza viruses, but coronaviruses in particular, you know, we learned quite a bit about them after SARS. And then we had MERS, the Middle Eastern respiratory virus that was also a coronavirus, mostly in camels in the Middle East, and now this one. And they do tend to live in bats and then get passed through animals to humans. They're what we call zoonoses. So there are things that we can do that decrease the risks of that happening, decrease the risks of a new influenza virus. We know some of the animal husbandry practices, things we do in wet markets in some parts of the world. But I think there's, and we are looking at those things now globally. You know, what WHO has a team that's been working with China to try and determine exactly where this came from and looking at the illegal market in animals that are used often for food, which is interesting. But then at a broader level, I think we also need to look at surveillance systems that we have globally. How do we monitor these things? How do we get a better exchange of information more quickly around the world? if I have one major regret, it's that we didn't globally as a community support China in suppressing this virus early on. It really took us a long time before we realized that this was something that was going to travel and affect the global world. I think we were in a bit of disbelief. So we now need to really rethink that, our global response if something like this emerges anywhere in the world again. And thirdly, I think at a national, international level, this virus has really uncovered health and social inequities, both within Canada, within BC, but also globally. And I think it's an opportunity for us to think about how do we address those? How do we address the fact that around the world, racialized communities, women were disproportionately affected, the challenges that we have in certain industries like the industry that you work in the restaurant business. How do we make sure that the people who have been most differentially affected are made whole in the system of coming out of this?
You're not talking about defunding the police, are you?
No, but I do think we need to look at racism and how structural racism has impacted how people have coped during this. And, you know, these are heavy, heavy subjects, but we know that Indigenous people are more likely to, Indigenous communities in the past have been decimated by pandemics. And we've seen this pandemic have the same effects in some Indigenous communities. But we also know because of systemic racism in our healthcare system, First Nations people may not feel safe accessing healthcare. So it compounds the problem. So this is laid a lot of those open, and we need to really look at that. Yeah. I also want to look at things like minimum basic incomes and how that can support people.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Speaking my language. What do you think, on that note real quickly, what do you think it would take for, at a municipal level, for us to sort of start refunneling those resources to, you know, places like wet houses and safe injection? I know we have some of those facilities in BC. We have the vending machines that give safe dosage, and, you know, the other major issues that are happening in our city, which is the fentanyl crisis as well as the meth crisis. And to me, this seems like a perfect opportunity to do that. We have things like empty arenas and empty, you know, concert venues. Like, when can we start moving forward to get these things kind of going from a financial? Because that's, to me, what the whole defund the police thing is. Not defunding the police, is reallocating funds, right?
Yeah, it is. And this is something that is also a crisis that we've been dealing with and that I've been part of trying to address for since 2016, our other public health emergency, the overdose crisis. And yeah, this has been exacerbated by the things that we've done to deal with the pandemic. So yes, we do need to look at homes, but not just putting people in hotels, which is one of the things that we have been doing for people who have been made homeless through this. But also having those supports, the mental health supports, the substance use supports, having options and roads for recovery for people with addictions. And you're right, decriminalization of people who use drugs is something that I have advocated for. I wrote a report on this and now has been taken up by several levels of government. So it has exposed that those challenges that people were facing have just been exacerbated by this pandemic. And now's our opportunity to make a difference with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think mental health obviously is an underlying issue here as well. We've seen recently in the last 3-4 years in every industry, whether it's sports or entertainment, and even just regular life, people have been more willing to come out and say, "Hey, yes, I suffer with anxiety. Hey, yes, I suffer with depression." So that's, I think, on the forefront. I'm curious what you think because I was actually talking to a guest last night at my bar. The other night, and she's a nurse from UConn, and she was saying that she's fearful of this term. You've had a COVID education from what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think and not to get dour or anything, but I think this is something that needs to be discussed. What do you think the long-term mental health effects can be from this, and how do you think we can attack that preventatively with things like funneling more funding to mental health at a younger age and just facilities available, whether it's another hotline people can call and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, well, and this is something that we've seen. We saw it in China where interpersonal violence was increased, substance use was increased. And, you know, that is an issue in the restaurant industry for sure. We know that. And challenges for young people in particular, where home is not always a safe place for them to be. And we've had way more increased calls to Kids Helpline, for example, not just from kids, but from parents who are at their wits' end trying to figure things out. One of the most important things that we know will make a difference is getting young people back into school. And the school is so much more than just book learning. It's about social interactions. It's a safe place to be. It's a place where they learn emotional and intellectual things as well. So that's important. And we're looking at how do we give teachers and people, educators in the school system, resources to deal with some of the mental health and anxiety issues that we know will be exacerbated by the pandemic and by the measures that we put in place. So that's a really important thing. I think as well that we need to remember that we are a resilient society. Young people are resilient. If there's one positive thing that we're seeing with this pandemic, it's that it's not causing severe illness in young people for the most part. So that's like a huge, huge relief. But now we need to make sure that we're not causing more damage than the pandemic by the restrictions that we're putting on young people. So we need to find that balance and we need to build on the resiliency. And resiliency comes from us working together and supporting each other. And that's why I think we've done so well here in BC in many ways by focusing on the things that we can do to support each other.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. And this is going to come from someone who is, if anybody's ever listened to this podcast, is not a really big hugger. But I will say that when this pandemic is done, I probably will give people some hugs. So
I am a hugger and it's been hard.
I know a lot of friends who are struggling in that area right now. And especially people working in the restaurant industry. I mean, one of the things that we're very known to be doing is when you see someone, you want to give them, you know, a hug or a tap or shake their hand. Yeah. And that's been a very difficult thing for, I know a lot of people. I like to shake a person's hand. People think I'm weird when they come in for a hug and I'm like, But I think I'll get better at it once I'm done.
I've got the COVID hand now because I have to admit, when people see me, they sometimes want to come up and give me a hug. And I'm like, oh, not right now.
I know. I love everything that you've said here. And I think what you and Mickey have just talked about here when it comes to especially a lot of the mental health stuff, I think that's very, very important. I'd urge anyone who's struggling with anything like that out there, especially during this time, to, you know, seek out any assistance that you might need. There's a lot of great resources out there.
You know, we need to look out for each other. And this has been hard on people in the hospitality industry, in the restaurant industry. And don't be afraid to ask your colleagues how they're doing. There's some great resources. They've said Kids Helpline is one, but the other one is Stop Overdose BC. Lots of great resources there about how to talk to friends and family about drug use and about concerns that you may have. The toxicity of the street drug supply right now is just, it is so, so bad. It's not been like this ever. And we need to support each other. And some of our friends and family and colleagues are suffering. And this is the time to reach out to them.
And lastly here, because I know we're running low on time here, I just want to I ran a couple questions through some friends and colleagues in the industry. So I have a little bit of mailbag section here for you. And this is a question coming from a friend of mine. She asks, when you make announcements for everyone to stay safe, i.e. post-Kelowna outbreak, what do you say to people that want to still go to restaurants, but they're maybe fearful or like, you know, especially of late, there's been some restaurants and stuff like that in the community that have had some outbreaks and they've had to shut down. How do you manage the anxiety for people who are fearful when they see things like this, that they can still go to restaurants and feel safe, but also that we all, as you say, we need to make sure that, you know, everyone, you know, follows protocols. How do you manage those two things? Because it's got to be tough.
Well, it is tough. And, you know, this is why I've sort of thrown it back a little bit on you guys by saying, you know what, let's have every business needs to have a COVID safety plan. And that tells your customers, it tells your staff that you've thought about it and that you put the effort into looking at the guidelines that we've come out with in partnership with the Restaurant Association and that you're doing your thing. And I've encouraged people to find those, you know, to ask what people are doing and to have confidence that if you're following those guidelines, then it's a safe place to be. And, you know, I missed restaurants a whole lot, so I go out too. And so partly it's by saying, you know, we have these plans. These plans are in place to protect your staff, to protect your customers. And that's the best thing we can do to make it work.
And it's definitely tough. I mean, as Mickey has said, you know, and with his work, it's been a lot slower. And it's, I mean, obviously, it's a lot based on travel. But I've been lucky with my hotel. We've been very busy. It's been, and people have been coming back, and people have been very receptive to the how we've been implementing our measures there. The hotel's been very on top of everything, and it took me a little while, definitely as a person, to have to wear a mask all the time. And I don't think I've ever washed my hands this much in my entire life. But you know, to harken back to your book, it's insane to think about how easy it is when you wrote an entire book on the idea of just washing your hands. And it's crazy to think how important that is and how much it actually does disseminate the virus. But it's crazy. Little things like that do make a big difference. So it's been good. And I know a lot of people in the industry who are actually coming back online, and they're, you know, it's been slow for some, but some are doing really well, and the industry's been doing good. But it's it's definitely, you know, as you say, managing expectations, things are always changing and stuff like that.
That's absolutely. And you know what? Washing your hands has always been an important thing, and cleaning your hands, and it protects us from all kinds of things like norovirus and, you know, salmonella and all those other things that are out there as well.
Yeah, some of us just started listening this year. My mom's been telling me that since I was a little tiny child. So
yes, the mother was right.
What are you trying to say? Am I a dirty person here? What's going on?
All I'm saying is I usually get sick maybe 4 to 5 times a year, and I have had perfect health this year. So one of those silver linings that we need to think about once in a while. I just want to say thank you so much. I think your message of togetherness is really important, and to be kind as well. Most people that I've talked to at my bar as well prefer to watch BC's report as opposed to their local provincial ones. So I think that says a lot. We're very, very thankful that we have the leadership that we do in this really, really trying time for everyone.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on. And I just want to say that, you know, your business is doing a great job. People are adapting. It's not been easy. But we will get through this. And we need just to keep going and to keep working together. And it'll be okay.
I see good things. You know, hopefully the fall here isn't as bad as everyone seems to think it might be. Hopefully, hopefully kids get back to school, restaurants, you know, stay open, and we get through this and the pandemic passes, hopefully sometime in 2021.
Yep.
I would say anybody out there who's interested in buying a book, definitely check out Bonnie's book. It's Soap and Water and Common Sense. I started reading it last night. It's pretty awesome. Thank you so much for all your efforts. Hopefully you get more time off sometime in the near future.
Well, hopefully I'll see you again at the visit.
At the hotel. I will definitely come by, and I'll pretend to give you a nice hug. And stay safe out there. Thank you for all your work, and I hope you have a lovely day.
Thank you. Take care.